Coming up on Over a Barrel, gas prices skyrocket across portions of California, as well as inflation numbers for the month of March are in. It was not good news for gasoline, and we have a potential imminent attack by Iran toward Israel, which is jittering the oil markets as well. That and so much more in Over a Barrel, which starts right now. Welcome to Over a Barrel. I'm Matt McClain, Patrick DeHaan here as well, and we have jam-packed podcast for you.
Boy.
Everything under the sun seems to be happening with gas prices, geopolitical, you name it, it's basically happening. Gas prices are jumping in certain states. Patrick, we've got a lot to discuss, man. On so many avenues and ways of looking at that. What do you want to dive in first? I do know that if you are listening right now, we would love for you to subscribe. We would love for you to give us some feedback. Patrick, how do they go about doing all of this stuff?
Yeah, shoot us a review as well on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. Would love a five-star review if you love the show and love our talk about it. But otherwise, you can send us an email to podcast@gasbuddy.com. Of course, you can always reach us on Twitter or X. I'm at Gas Buddy Guy there. Matt's at Over a Barrel Matt. So now that we got the socials out of the way, Matt, if anyone remembers our last episode talking about cash, credit, and debit, we do have some follow-up there. And I wouldn't say it was a bet, but
we didn't make a bet. There was no money exchange promised.
Thankfully, because in this instance, I think you were more accurate than I was.
Wait, in terms of
your guessing.
Can you say that again?
I can feel your ego just getting bigger and bigger.
I don't have an ego, dude. I don't have an ego, but I do like it when I'm right. Just throwing it out there.
Well, you know, let's start with that because it was a little bit of a surprise. I had anticipated, if I remember right, I think I said 80% was going to be credit and then 15% debit and 5% cash. Well, mm-hmm. I was pretty close to cash. Cash is obviously the third most used of those three different payment methods. But credit and pay with Gas Buddy. Now, Matt, I have to say, maybe there's a lot of listeners that are pay with Gas Buddy subscribers, and I would love for that to be the case. So the poll was, what do you use when you fill your tank? Is it credit or pay with Gas Buddy or debit or cash? The results are in, some 300 votes. If you voted over there, we appreciate
it. I want to tell you. I abstained from voting, so I didn't skew anything. I just want you to know. So,
well, don't worry. It's only one of 300, but you know, if you want to go in there and have all your burner accounts. But so 16.5%, Matt.
Okay.
60.5% were credit.
Yep.
So that it wasn't a surprise, right? The majority of people are using credit. Not quite 2/3. The interesting thing for me was debit. 31% of Americans are using debit, and I'll remember. You and I talked about the risk of debit last week, you know, because if you have your PIN stolen from you, and I think that happened to you, right, Matt?
It did, actually. In fact, it's happened to me on my personal account and my business account within the past several years. So I've had to go through it twice, and there are some, it's not easy, and it's quite painful.
Yeah. So it's interesting that almost a third paid with debit and then cash was only 8%. So I was a little off. Although, Matt, I would say that looking at the poll on Spotify, we had slightly different results. So there were only 7 votes on Spotify, but 85% of people said they use credit or pay with Gas Buddy. 14% said debit, and nobody on Spotify responded that they use cash. So, you know, Twitter, we had almost 300 votes. Spotify, we only had 7. But, you know, it's interesting. Maybe folks that listen on Spotify are a bit of a different demographic. But
quite possibly, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and neither of us carry cash. We talked about that last week as well.
Yeah.
It's something I'm trying to slowly introduce back into my life. You know, the pieces of paper with green ink on them that, if they're real, do not come back off on your fingers.
As I just checked my wallet, mine's a little dry on cash.
So it's mine. I'm trying to figure out how to make that better. I'm trying to figure out ways to pay with me. And I'll give you a simple answer as to why. If, take, for example, we talked about this last week at the gas pump. I know as a business owner, because I take credit, debit, and ACH and all of that, you know, digital checks is basically what it is. I know that credit card is by far the highest percentage of the amount of money that is deducted from the transaction. But the sad commentary is when you're paying at the gas pump, it's also actually the most secure. Right. As we talked about the PIN numbers and whatever the case may be. And so I always use credit, even though I know that's costing that local gas station the most amount of possibilities there out of any, you know, options for payment, simply because of the security aspects to it.
Yeah. And you gotta make sure you're covered, right? You don't want to take the risk.
Exactly. But the unfortunate aspect is, you know, it takes out the most amount for a processing fee or a transactional fee, as they are often called. Whereas like an ACH slash debit where you pop in your PIN number and whatnot, it's usually about 67 to 70% less of a transactional fee than the credit card processing transactional fee is. So
I just want the kickback, you know, and the interesting thing is I don't often use my credit card. I mostly use Pay with Gas Buddy. And so, you know, if I use a credit card though, some of them have pretty good rewards. So, but I'm like you, usually if it's not for the reward, I want the kickback. And I bet you a lot of Americans want that too.
Yep. And that's kind of why we were discussing last week, you know, sometimes gas stations have a cash price, sometimes they have the credit price, and there's a difference between the two. That's why. Now that we've kind of got all of that out of the way, we have so much going on as the recording of this particular podcast.
Yes, we do.
I mean, I could almost throw a dart and we've got something important to discuss here on my screen. Let's go ahead. For you folks in California, if you don't mind, Patrick, why are gas prices specifically in California just going through the roof? I mean, it's crazy at some of the prices that I'm seeing on that. What's happening?
Well, it is. You know, we've been watching, anyone that pays attention to California knows it's a bit of a petrol island. They're off on their own. They have a lot of regulations, right? The summer blends are different. The timing is different. The taxes are different. They're much higher. They have a cap and trade program. So there's a lot of different things. Now, the entity that looks at and tracks some statistics in California, there is an entity just similar to the Energy Information Administration, which is under the Department of Energy, right? The EIA is the statistical arm. The state of California has their own arm, essentially, called the California Energy Commission that looks at data. And Matt, over the last couple of weeks, we've seen stocks of gasoline continuing to fall. And that's the challenge, is that stocks are a little bit light. We're coming into a period of heavy maintenance. And so really, by the way, Matt, it's not just California. California is kind of the epicenter when this happens, but it also affects areas that get supplied by California. And I've heard from folks in Arizona, Phoenix, prices have popped up there too, but California up 20 cents in the last month, Arizona up 17, sorry, in the last week.
Wow.
In the last week, California's up 20 cents, Arizona up 17 cents, Nevada 11 cents, Alaska 11 cents, Oregon 9 cents, Washington 9 cents. But if you look at the last month, Matt, the Rockies and the West Coast, Utah up 67 cents a gallon in the last month, Idaho 58 cents, Arizona 57, Alaska 56, Nevada 54, California 50, Oregon 50. So it's really the Rockies and the West Coast. And what's happening there, it's all about refinery maintenance. And California has an exceptional amount of refineries that are about to start maintenance. In addition to relatively tight inventories, this is the time of year that things can just run amok out in the West Coast. Arizona has its own challenges, Matt. The population boom out there is just staggering. I think Arizona last year had seen some of the biggest population increases. And so a lot of what you experience at the pump now in the spring, when you make this changeover from winter to summer, is very tight supply. And that's affecting the entire West Coast, made worse by refinery maintenance, which is a necessary evil, right? If you don't do maintenance on your car for 60,000 miles, you're going to have a sludged up, disgusting engine, and it's going to look like maple syrup. Now, refineries are a little bit more complex than running an engine, right? You have to worry about the thickness of a lot of the pipes at the refineries. So they're doing thickness tests, they're doing integrity tests, they're doing maintenance, inspections, all sorts of things. Unfortunately, while that work is being carried out, you cannot fully utilize your refinery. That is, you can't run it at 80 or 90%. Now, most refineries are made up of several units, Matt, so they can shut down part of the refinery, not the whole thing. But there comes a point in time where maintenance is interrupting the ability for them to fully supply. So what's going on in the West Coast is really just a heavy round of refinery maintenance ahead of the summer. And making it worse is the fact that we're making the transition over to summer gasoline. So it's really those two things are the culprit. And unfortunately, Matt, you might need some, you know, you're going to need some more cash in California.
Oh, boy.
Because I think prices will continue to go up. By the way, California is back over $5 a gallon. And they're up 20 cents, as I mentioned last week. The statewide average in California now $5.37. And Matt, you probably paid attention to this. Maybe a lot of our listeners didn't. Today's another important piece of data came out today. CPI, Consumer Price Index.
Yes.
And speaking of California at 5.37, the statewide average in California today is 54 cents higher today than it was a year ago. So talk about inflation, talk about CPI, right? The CPI number this morning was higher than expected. What, 3.5% year-on-year increase in the consumer price index?
It was 3.5%. And I have to admit, the summary, and I am currently looking at the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics website, the actual government website, nothing filtered in a news article or anything.
Hey, and by the way, adding something in there, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the BLS, actually uses GasBuddy data for their gasoline and diesel price calculations there.
Well, now that I did not know. So let me ask you this then. They are attributing this 3.5% overall, basically gasoline as being a contender for the reason why this past month was so high.
Yeah.
But when I look at the way that it's separated out, food, energy services, commodities, etc., I'm looking at and help me understand that under the tab energy, gasoline, all types. For the month of March, it was only showing 1.5% seasonally adjusted changes from the preceding month. So how is it that the 1.5 really attributed so much to that 3.5?
Well, here's the thing, right? You have energy, you have food, and then you have all items minus food and energy. And it's the all items that saw a big jump. Energy was actually one of the smallest contributor to that, because Matt, the national average today is actually only up a couple of cents from a year ago. The price of diesel, by the way, is still about 15 cents lower than a year ago. So that's why energy is actually the smallest contributor there. But if you look at all items less food and energy, and by the way, I'm on bls.gov/CPI, I'm seeing that on the chart there on the left side, that the major categories minus food and energy grew at 3.8%. And that major categories, if you add all of it, right, that's where the index came back with 3.5%. So energy was actually the smallest part of that, with prices up 2.1% in March, not seasonally adjusted.
So, and yet in the news release,
and if you look at commodities, by the way, it was down 0.7%. So the news release, you know, interesting. I'm looking at non-seasonally adjusted. Go ahead.
Right. Well, I was just going to say the news release by the Bureau of Labor Statistics attributed much of this to gasoline. But when you look at the actual numbers, that was you literally explained my question for me, which is it doesn't appear to be as much of an impact, at least not yet, because prices are California and other aspects we know. But that's in the month of April. We're talking about March numbers. It doesn't seem to be such a large portion as what the news release would, I think, try to attribute it to be. Is that a fair assessment of mine, or am I way off?
No, I think you're right. Energy is the smallest component of the major categories: food, energy, and then basically everything except those. You know, it's the all items that pulled the number up, it looks like, more significantly. So, you know, looking at our data, Matt. And if I quickly try and do this, I don't think I'll be able to pull this off very quickly.
Well, while you're looking that up, in total fairness, I will say in this same news release, the one of the reasons that they are attributing, you know, gasoline prices as being one of the contenders there, and they actually have it in parentheses, You know, it was 1.7% in March, the gasoline index increase. Before the seasonal adjustment, gasoline prices, quote, rose 6.4% in March. That's where they are attributing the reasoning, I guess, behind their, gasoline being one of the problems for the inflation.
Yeah, that's interesting. I was going to quickly look up the numbers from last year to see, you know, the monthly average. And it looks like, you know, last year over the course of the month of March, let's see here, the average gasoline price for March of last year, Matt, from the start to finish was about $3.42. And as I quickly get the numbers for this year and then throw it in here, let's see, get raw data. It's a little higher. So that's, you know, that's where the number came from. There we go. Yeah. So, and what did the percent say there? The increase last year to this year?
Let me go back to that tab. Give me just a moment. It was saying, let's see, go back to the energy section. I'm just going to read it quote for quote here. The energy index rose 1.1% in March after increasing 2.3% in February. The gasoline index increased 1.7% in March, parenthesis, before seasonal adjustment. Gasoline prices rose 6.4% in March, remove the parenthesis. The index for electricity rose, 0.9%. All right, then we're moving on to other things there. But gasoline seems to get the hit there.
The year-over-year, just doing, and their data methodology is probably a lot more, complex than me just looking at the national average, because some states weight more heavily, like California, for example, right, is one of the top consuming states, one of the largest states, the largest state, when it comes to some of these factors. And if we just look at the national average last year to this year for the month of March, last year, as I mentioned, 342 and 4/10, this year, 346 and 2/10, that's an increase of 1.11%. Now, the interesting thing is over the month of March, we started March this year at about 335. We finished the month at about 351. That's about a 4.81% increase over the month of March. So, I mean, a lot of these numbers are expected, but still, I mean, the rest of it here, energy is not the biggest driver of prices, but it is a driver nonetheless. Price of gasoline jumped significantly over the month of March, as we've talked about, right? If you listen to the Overbarrel podcast, you'll know that this is not unusual to see gas prices going up in March, and it is continuing in April, and it probably will for another few weeks. So, but it's interesting though, Matt, because the Fed, how it's navigating, the high interest rate environment that we're in is there's a lot of expectations that they'll be able to start rolling back those interest rates. And now it's looking like inflation is still sticking around. I mean, the national average today is still 2 cents higher than last year.
It is remaining quite stubborn.
Yeah, stubbornly high. So the question is, will the Fed actually be able to cut this year, and when? Or what's really bothering the stock market today, not bothering oil, what's really bothering the market today is that this is so unexpected, and the Fed may have even more work to do yet.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone's been talking about decreases. Let's get on the decreases. Three interest rate cuts this year. But my thinking, I was talking to my dad this morning, it's like, I wonder if they might have to increase one more time before we start the decreases. But yeah, you look at a place like California and holy smokes, the difference today, the percent difference in the statewide average, California is 11% more expensive today at the gas pump than last year. So those CPI numbers, they could continue to be a little bit, warmer or hotter than what a lot of people are expecting.
So I think the question mark, because we all know that when the Federal Reserve, as you pop a top there, I'm not sure exactly what you're consuming, but I heard that.
It's an energy drink, Matt. It's an energy drink.
Oh, boy. Well, then we're 4 hours later, we'll still be on this podcast. But the aspect is, we all know that when the Federal Reserve makes a statement, it is quite weighted in its words. They could, in theory, just make an announcement and say, hey, we're not lowering the interest rate in July, so get over it, and then we may see inflation go down. They could threaten to do yet one more rate increase, which could have an impact. It's every word that they release and speak into existence is paid so closely attention to that it is It is really just interesting. I mean, Wall Street, oil prices, you name it, and it has a global impact. I mean, sure. they could sneeze in just the wrong manner during
those
their
minutes.
Statement.
I mean, yeah. People literally one word changes, and everyone's like, "Oh my goodness!"
Yes,
a word. You know, so
it's a big
your
deal.
Point. Oh, it is. People, it's a very big deal when they change a word or intention, right? Because everyone's trying to guess their intentions and then they change one little word. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of this is really critical. You know, the Fed's mission obviously has been to fight inflation. And now inflation remains stubbornly high. So,
yeah.
You know what? That's what's going on the West Coast. And by the way, you know, kind of getting back to the point, if you're in California, Nevada, Arizona, Washington, Oregon, by the way, I'm drinking this energy drink. I feel like I'm talking faster than ever. if you're on the West Coast, that goes for Alaska and Hawaii as well. You're probably going to see more price increases. In fact, California could go up another 10 or 25 cents, Matt, because they have a lot of refinery maintenance coming up in the next few weeks. So, you know, it's let's hope there's no sticker shock. Let's hope there's no unexpected issues that get discovered.
Well,
but how many times have you gone to the dealer for some work on your car and they call you and they say, oh, by the way,
you've got $1,000 more worth of stuff. Yes. No, it's
and then shortly after that, your phone rings and it says, we'd like to talk to you about your vehicle's extended warranty.
Yeah, right. Now, for those of you who are wondering what the other aspect that led to inflation increasing for the third straight month, it wasn't just gasoline that's receiving attribution for that. Rent prices for apartments and condos and homes and whatnot are receiving the other credit for that. So gasoline and rent prices are the leading candidates, if you will, for why inflation was so stubbornly high in the month of March. So,
speaking of interest rates, rent, right? Mortgages, financing.
Yeah. Right. So keep that in mind. And Patrick, you brought up the next point that I've got for you, which is what else could potentially happen across the globe that could create problems? And we have an exclusive report from Bloomberg. We don't have the exclusive. Bloomberg has the exclusive, so we'll give attribution to them. But I'm just going to read the lead line and then let you comment after.
Oh,
because
boy.
Here is the lead line from this Bloomberg exclusive report. Quote, U.S. sees missile strike on Israel by Iran, proxies as imminent, unquote. That's
Mic
a
drop.
Problem. Yeah, that is a problem.
That's a big problem.
That's what I keeps me awake a couple of nights the past week, wondering what's about to happen with all of that. Because even in that story with Bloomberg, you know what they're talking about? Brent crude. You know what they're talking about? Gasoline prices. You know what they're talking about? The price isn't going down if this happens. So talk
That's
to us about
all that.
That's
what keeps you up at night? These energy drinks are what keep me up at night.
No, that I you get stressed out over certain aspects of our economy because inflation is already stubbornly high.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then we could really see a very serious problem that is beyond the control of anything that we can, the U.S., not we, Patrick and myself,
right.
But the U.S. can do. This is a problem. It's a very
well. Don't go on social media then, because there's a lot of alarm sounding there. I mean, there have been a lot of alarms going off in social media. How we're, you know, this. And first and foremost, you always have to take it with a grain of salt, right? But is it really the end of the world kind of thing? You know, I mean, this has been ever since Israel launched a attack on the Iran embassy, in Syria, right? Iran has been suggesting it's going to retaliate. So this is not a geopolitical flare-up that was unexpected, right? I think the situation going on over there is very severe in terms of what's expected. This would be within the realm of, you know, not shocking because Israel launched an attack. So
the question that I have, Patrick, is that Israel and Iran are such sworn enemies and have been,
right. Yeah.
You know, since the 1970s, when there was essentially a coup d'etat in Iran and things kind of took a very different direction. They are sworn enemies. This is what people have talked about for years that they do not want to see happen. And it looks as if it is becoming closer than ever that the two nations would basically get into direct conflict back and forth with one another. Is the alarm sounding appropriate for something like this?
I think it's getting more worrisome. The interesting thing, Matt, is that Iran's oil exports are almost at a five-year high. As of late January, Iran was exporting over 3 million barrels of oil per day. So, you know, if this situation continues to escalate, there could be a risk to those 3 million barrels of oil. And with OPEC's production cuts, it's critical that the oil that we're anticipating, right, as economies are improving, there's more reliance on the producers that are producing. And by the way, Iran's oil output has gone up. The U.S. has not, I wouldn't say they've made it easy for Iran to export oil with their sanctions, but Iran's been getting around sanctions. And a lot of that oil is ending up in China. So the worry is that if something happens to the flow of oil out of Iran and, say, to China, it's going to have a ripple effect. And it was really interesting, Matt, after that headline hit the press, the price of Brent and West Texas Intermediate crude oil jumped like a dollar a barrel.
Yeah, so it was trading down earlier, like as before we were recording this podcast this morning. We're recording this in the afternoon. It had been trading down, and now it's, as you mentioned, it's up more than a buck a barrel at this point.
Yeah, we're up a little over a percent at this point, and this is just imminent, right? It's not being reported on what has happened yet. So there's a possibility here that by the time you're listening to this, there could have been an attack. So, you know, that's what the market doesn't like.
The uncertainty.
Oil hates turmoil, and the uncertainty over that could impact what you pay at the pump. And Matt, a lot of what we've covered on the podcast, right? Prices going up has been seasonal. The price of oil has been the wild card, though. Oil prices now, you know, $86 a barrel. That's towards the higher part of the range that we anticipated. And there's still the possibility they go higher. But the Energy Information Administration, as we were talking earlier, the statistical wing of the Department of Energy actually showed a pretty modest jump in crude oil inventories here this week. The U.S. Energy Information Administration showing a rise of almost 6 million barrels in crude oil inventories. And this is a weekly report for those listeners who have no idea. The EIA comes out with a weekly report on fluctuations that get analysts really excited to look at this report. Essentially, crude oil imports were up about 6 million barrels. Oil inventories are still about 13 million barrels below last year. But that's kind of offsetting some of the news, and that's why oil prices briefly were negative earlier today, Matt, was because oil inventories increased by a much larger than expected number. Although I'd say a lot of that was because, the U.S. imported about the same amount of oil last week, but oil exports plummeted by 1.3 million barrels a day. Oil exports were only 2.7 million barrels. So
then the question that I would have is, if we run into an imminent situation, and understandably, even the United States, in speaking about oil as well as refinery issues, the United States is increasing their concern about the attacks on the Russian refineries that Ukraine has been making over the past a few weeks as well. As creating a problem globally also. There's a lot of not so good news coming out in one aspect or another with all of that. So then the main question that I have for you would be, you know, I don't even want to say it out loud, but here we are. If Israel and Iran do get into a back and forth, no one truly knows exactly how that's going to play out with regard to how intense or lack thereof it may get. But let's say they do get into a direct conflict back and forth with one another, the OPEC cuts. Is it your assessment at this point that OPEC would increase their production to help offset and mitigate the situation? Or do you believe they would stick by their cuts at this particular point and just let oil prices really go up really high?
Yeah, that's my expectation, is OPEC is probably not going to act. I mean, the Saudis and Russians would love oil prices to go up even more dramatically, right? It supports both their bottom line. So I wouldn't look for broader OPEC production increases anytime soon. What you will find, Matt, is though as oil prices go up, you may find countries are cheating a little bit more on their quota, right? That they might start producing a little bit more without really telling OPEC that they're doing it. OPEC has a tendency to do that. When oil prices go up, countries start, quote unquote, accidentally producing more,
right?
Right, because they're incentivized by the rise in the price of oil. So we'll have to see if that happens this time around. I mean, oil prices have recently gone up in the last few weeks. So we'll have to see if at the next joint meeting that OPEC has, if, you know, there's some cheating going on. It wouldn't surprise me with oil at $86 a barrel. But yeah, no, I would not expect OPEC to take an official stance of raising production anytime soon. Even if there is, you know, some sort of large jump in the price of oil, I think that OPEC would let it get to $100 easy.
So then I'm going to ask you something that probably any listener right now would want to ask you, which is, how high do you think it could go should we get into a situation between Israel and Iran?
Well, I mean, there's so many nuances for how the situation could go, right? Depending on escalations, if there are further attacks, where those attacks are they on infrastructure? There's just a lot of what ifs there. You know, if it'd be significant, I could see oil going over $100 a barrel. But I think right now, Iran has to be fairly measured as well, because the U.S. has promised potential retaliation as well. So the Iranians don't want to escalate too much. At the same time, they don't want to not respond and look weak. So this is all about calculating their hand. And I don't think they have a strong hand, but they're probably going to respond, because
it,
if they don't.
It would seem, I mean, it would seem, I don't want to call
it logical. A calculated
response
is what's expected.
Yeah, and sure. And it's one of those things where, it just almost looks understandable that the U.S. would see a missile strike on Israel by Iran as imminent, because it does appear as if that's what's going to happen. And no one should be surprised if it does, I suppose, would be a better way of looking at it.
Right.
But the key is, you know, how high could it go is a very interesting question. And that, as we have pointed out on this podcast more than once, you know, oil prices, gasoline prices, that doesn't just directly impact you whenever you are filling up, but transportation costs and other aspects that can also have a direct impact on what you pay on the store shelf when you're buying other products as well, from clothing to food to just about everything out there.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And speaking about supply, Matt, I wanted to point out one thing that we've now made it through the eclipse. A lot of Americans did hit the road, according to our data. It wasn't necessarily a big jump.
I was in the direct path of the totality, and let me tell you, there was a 235-mile backup from Mount Vernon, Illinois, to Nashville, Tennessee, along I-57 and I-24, and it, what was a two-hour drive turned into a 9- to 12-hour drive constant if you didn't even pull over. So many, many people. That was going to be the final question that I asked you for this particular podcast, which was, what did you find out as far as gasoline usage, and did you get any reports of shortages and outages?
No, I didn't. I didn't really hear of anything. That was not unexpected, right? I think we had well documented that most areas were going to go off without a hitch. We did not see or get any data to tell us any otherwise. Demand did go up a bit. If you look at Sunday, the day ahead of the eclipse, there was a lot of travel in the areas of the country that are referred to as pad 1, 2, and 3. Those would be the East Coast, the South, like areas like Texas, and in the Midwest. So those three areas saw gasoline demand going up, as one would expect. Whereas the areas of the West Coast and Rockies saw gasoline demand down. So, you know, that's right on with expectations, right? People were traveling more in the affected, the area of the eclipse, and people out west were probably driving in the areas of the eclipse, so to speak. So
I got to be honest with you. I have not seen traffic that intense since the last time I was in downtown Chicago on the Dan Ryan. And you know exactly what I'm talking about there. The only and the fact of its longevity going on for 9, 10, 12 hours of nothing but you know, 10, 15 mile per hour, you know, travel speeds on roads that are listed as 70 miles per hour for the speed limit. That was almost more as impressive to me as the eclipse itself.
Yeah. You know, so yeah, there was a lot of demand. We did not hear any stories of stations running out. I know that was a worry with people everywhere, but like I said, these, you know, if you look at our data, with gasoline demand, as I quickly pull it up, again, we break this down by five different regions across the country, what we call PAD districts, which the acronym is Petroleum Administration for Defense District. Basically, after World War II, we divided up the country into different strategic regions to make sure that they were all supplied. And if you look at that data, what you see is generally a big, a small drop in demand, then preceded by a big jump in demand that occurred on the 7th of April, which would have been Sunday. But then on Monday, demand plummeted in those areas where the eclipse was most visible, specifically in the Midwest. Demand on Monday was down about 13% compared to the prior Monday. So, you know, bottom line here, Matt, is looking at our data tells us, yeah, people were definitely moving in the regions that saw the eclipse most significantly, the eastern half of the country. People moved less often out the West Coast and the Rockies. But overall, looking at weekly demand over the last week, I'm quickly looking for my numbers, but I think weekly demand, if I'm right, there it is. Weekly demand so far this week is actually just a percentage above last week. So, you know, everyone's always really surprised, oh, the eclipse is going to be, you know, off the charts busy. And by the way, Sunday, Matt, did see a 9.6%, so almost a 10% increase in gasoline demand.
Oh, no doubt.
Compared to the prior Sunday. So
most
that's a big
of that
jump.
Was probably in my neck of the woods of I'm standing right now.
Exactly.
Impressed.
So, you know, there's a big jump on Sunday because people are moving for the eclipse. And then on Monday, there was a 5.5% drop compared to the prior Monday because people, you know, they're stopping, they're at where they're going to watch it. And so all in all, Matt, you know, we can see that there was something that happened, but it wasn't so off the charts that stations ran out of gasoline because people still had work, people still had school, you know, schools may have stepped outside to look at it, but all in all, it just highlights that the gasoline network is very resilient. And wherever you need to go, there's going to be gasoline there, even if it's an eclipse.
Yeah. And let me tell you, that was a sight to see. If you've never experienced a totality, there is a massive difference between a 99% eclipse and a 100% totality. Dramatic difference. It gets
even here in Florida, by the way, you could see it wasn't quite as bright outside.
Yeah.
You know, as it was before the eclipse.
With
so,
the totality, we had street lights that kicked on, the crickets were chirping, the birds stopped moving, the temperature dropped 10 to 15 degrees, and it got dark enough where we were seeing stars and a 360 degree dusk along the edge of the sky as it was meeting up to the you know, the ground itself. It was thoroughly so impressive. And that's the second one that I've ever seen. The other one was back in 2017. And before that, obviously never in my lifetime and possibly and probably never in my lifetime again. That was a one-off that I'll never perhaps experience ever again.
Yeah, so, that certainly is wild. But, you know, wow, what an update today, Matt. We covered the cash credit debit poll. We covered Israel-Iran, the overall CPI numbers. And now we're talking about the eclipse and much ado about the eclipse. So thankfully, everything went off without a hitch. But unfortunately, as we close up here, a little bit of rough or somber news is that, you know, if you're out west, expect gas prices to keep going up. It may be noticeable, especially California, Arizona, Nevada, Oregon, Washington, fill up sooner rather than later. And here's a new one, Matt. I do want to alert the folks in the mid-Atlantic states, basically, you know, kind of from the D.C. metro area all the way up to Boston. This is the last region of the country. Several states in the mid-Atlantic and Northeast are going to be making the jump over to summer gasoline here in the next few days. And you're probably going to see a jump of 15 to 40 cents a gallon. So if you're in those areas, mid-Atlantic, Northeast, fill your tank up because prices are going to jump because you're making the last step towards summer gasoline.
Well, this has not been a podcast filled with good news, unfortunately. There's been a lot out there, and of course, we'll be keeping you up to date on all of those things. And if we ever need to, we'll, of course, even do special report podcasts as well, and possibly we've done them before, live, you know, situations if it's ever warranted. So make sure you stick with us, and we'll, of course, keep you up to date. So, Patrick, once again, folks who need to get into contact with us real quick as we're coming to a close.
Yeah, podcast@gasbuddy.com is our email address. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on social. Throw us a like. I'd love to get a great for review as well on the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Otherwise, throw your questions out there on social. Over a Barrel Show on Twitter. I'm at Gas Buddy Guy, and you're Over a Barrel Matt. We'd love to hear from you. But for now, so long. We'll see you next time.
Have a good one.